Hi everybody and welcome to our podcast session three. It's already our third one, Zamreen, which at times gone very quickly on us. Thank you all. I'm Esther Chesterman, so thank you for joining. Hopefully you've had a listen to our previous two podcasts when we looked at access arrangements on our first one and then school refusal on our second. And thank you for all those who've engaged with our podcast, liked, shared and joined the conversation. So we're really pleased starting to hear everybody's voices. How are you today, Zamreen?
I'm very well, Esther. I'm very excited about today's podcast as well.
So am I. Do you want to introduce who we have? We have a third person with us.
Yay. I'm really excited to introduce a really good friend of mine called Dr. Helen Maffini, who is an absolute incredible person in the world of education. She specializes in mindfulness and helping young people with their social, emotional, educational needs in education. And you may have already come across her because her work is everywhere. So Helen, welcome to our podcast and thank you so much for doing this. We're really excited to have you.
Oh, thank you so much, Zamreen, for that lovely introduction, and nice to be here with you, Esther, as well. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Thanks, Helen. So we've had a very brief chat. I've only just met you, Helen, so I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about your work. And we thought today we'd have a conversation, and I hope people will be interested in our conversation. Where do you think is a good place to start, Helen? What's your current thinking of the landscape in this sort of space that you're working in at the moment?
I think kind of got off course in a lot of places. I work in lots of different countries around the world, and I think children's well-being and their levels of stress and anxiety are not being really taken into consideration as much as I think we need to. I thought this before COVID, and I think post-COVID it's even more needed that we kind of focus on making sure children feel safe and secure and ready to learn before we start diving in and trying to kind of really catch up, is what I hear a lot, or close the gap on the things that were missed, I guess, during the COVID period.
Yeah, so there's been a real shift, though you'd started your work pre-COVID, hadn't you? And obviously you're seeing, it sounds as if you're seeing an increased need for this approach.
Yes, definitely. I think, I've kind of been involved with social emotional learning since, the early 2000s. That's always been my passion and what I just saw naturally as a need for students. And I think, I got so interested in different aspects of it, and I found mindfulness really worked well for myself because I have quite an anxious personality myself. And whenever I learn things, I always think like, oh, how can we teach this to children? This could be quite useful. So I've been researching mindfulness, especially with preschoolers, with young children, for quite a while now, and bringing mindfulness into preschools and primary schools, and sometimes with teenagers as well. And I think it's one tool that can be really helpful for kids when they're navigating the learning landscape and trying to manage all the ups and downs that we have during our school life.
I think that's what's so exciting, Helen, about and interesting about your work, is that you were doing this way before it became such an issue, during the pandemic and, lockdown exasperating it. And also you've got such a wide lens of seeing this because of your work internationally. And I think we'd be really interested in kind of hearing about the sort of work that actual examples of the work you've done around this, and whether that's changed or not in terms of the activities you do, or how you help young people?
Yeah, so I'm an expat. I've lived in 15 countries now. I'm a real expat. So that's been interesting because I've been able to see from my children's point of view. I have two daughters who are adults now, one in university and one is out in the work world. But also working in different countries. And I see kind of the same issues in many countries, this stress and anxiety and pressure, even with young children in many places. So there's a very strong emphasis on the academic, and I'm not saying academics aren't important at all, but I think when we put so much of our focus on that, we lose sight of the learning that could take place if children were more comfortable, were less stressed and less anxious and had the tools. So I'll give you an example. I just got back from Hong Kong a couple of days ago, that is a very academically intense country where children are very engaged in lots of different learning, but can be kind of over stimulated, I would say, but having many going to school and then going to the classes after school almost mm-hmm. every day, and working towards this entrance exam to get for primary school. So when we bring in those kind of tools and help kids to start talking about emotions, which are not, it's a huge part of who we are as humans, but it's something that we often don't talk about, or it's even taboo in a lot of places to talk about your emotions. So I think normalizing that we do have emotions, and how can we deal with them? How can we use them to help us and to manage all the different situations that we come across is really important.
Just on that, Helen, I think between us, we cross different age groups, really. And we have a proportion of our students who are adult learners who are bringing with them some anxiety around being an adult learner. And I'm just wondering whether you see any sort of impact from working with somebody who's 5-6 years old and developing strategies. Can those be then taught or carried through to preteen, teen, and then adult learning, do you think?
Yeah, I think this is something that can really benefit anyone at any age. And a lot of the work that I do is with teachers and with parents, right? Because we know that we can't just tell the kids to be mindful or calm down or whatever it is that we need to do that and model that for the children. But I think there's so much research coming out kind of globally at all the different ages, and the strongest research is probably in the teen and adult landscape, really. So for sure, I think the earlier the better, but of course we can start this journey at any time. I mean, I was in my 30s when I started to dive into this, so I think a lot of us, we didn't have this kind of opportunity in our education or in our home life when we were growing up, to learn these skills and tools in most cases.
I think, Helen, one of the things that you're raising, which is so interesting, in our previous podcast on school refusal, we were talking about the kind of how difficult some young people are finding it to even come into school at the moment. And this has been exacerbated since lockdown. And do you think there's a link between that sort of refusal and difficulties of coming into school and not being able to use your voice?
Yeah, I think for sure it's kind of, all these things are linked, aren't they? And I think we just need to start those kind of the conversations and bring this to awareness. I think there's, you know, if children are refusing to attend school, there must be a reason behind that, and it's usually emotional or a social issue, right, that they have built up over time. And I think the more that we can dive into that and support children and acknowledge and, you know, not try to force them to change if they're not ready to, but really find out what's behind that and work with that and try to engage children, and instead of trying to fit the children into the mold, maybe we need to think about fitting ourselves more into the child's thinking and what they're feeling at the moment.
I read something, Helen, that just in a little bit of reading around anxiety, and, you know, sort of that word conjures up so much for people in different ways, doesn't it? But it's around that, you know, sort of young people, so anybody engaging in learning has an element of anxiety or anxiousness about it. But I suppose it's when it tips into them being a barrier to learning, isn't it? It's when it becomes something where you can't focus, you can't engage, and all those cognitive skills are then dampened because that anxiety and anxiousness is being more dominant. And is it that you're seeing, you know, so the tools that you're looking to develop with students, sounds like it's about self-awareness of emotion and valuing that emotion, but it's also around the school community, isn't it? And as you said, teachers and those all engaged with that student's journey, how to make it a non-threatening space for them.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we're humans experience so many emotions. Anxiety is a normal emotion for all of us to experience. But as you said, when it gets to be the most prevalent emotion that we're feeling, or it's something that is really, really heightened, then our learning is not our priority, and we're in flight or fight. We might be just trying to survive. And there's a lot of physical sensations and physical things that happen in our body. So teaching kids to kind of recognize where things are happening in our body, to be able to give them tools using their breath or their movement, body movement. But it's not only for the students, as you mentioned. I think, you know, it's really about coming together as a community, engaging the parents in doing these things, because we know, right, if you hear one thing at school and then you go home and you hear something totally different, that's very confusing for children. And parents, sometimes they're doing the best they can and they don't know as well. I mean, I didn't know. I know I did lots of things when I was a parent that I think, oh, I thought that was good, but it probably wasn't the best thing looking back, you know. So I think, yeah, it's really making this part of, you know, not a separate thing, but just something that teachers and parents learn about. And I think, you know, teacher training school would be a great place to introduce these things, so that it's just integrated into the classroom, you know. It's not something like a separate class that people take to be mindful, but something that we're kind of doing in all of our lessons and as a regular part of the culture of the schools that we work in.
Helen, I really agree with that. I was on my MPQH course the other day with other head teachers, and one of them was just saying that we don't know how to deal with young people who are having anxiety. We'll be saying to them, you need to go to a history lesson, and they'll say, I can't because it's making me anxious. So it felt like not only was the head teacher feeling kind of disabled by or paralyzed by the tools that they didn't have, but also the young person didn't know what those tools were either. If you could kind of summarize what those tools are, what kind of things could schools be doing more? What could how could we be doing more of the same thing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Samreen, and you know, there's so many different ways, and you kind of have to try and see what works in each context, but and with, you know, even within the context, some students will prefer different things. But I think it, the most important thing is opening up that discussion, right? That talking with students about how they're feeling, what's, you know, bothering them or what they're excited about. But some of the things that you could kind of do, you know, are bringing in just the breath work into classes. So, you know, just before we're all rushing around and we're starting things, but just, you know, maybe taking a moment at the start of class to take a deep breath in and kind of ground ourselves and get ready for learning. Having something that's worked really well with teens is just having a strip of paper where teens can just write a message to the teacher without, you know, anybody else knowing, and putting that in, or just having a private journal and giving, you know, a few minutes for kids to write that down, and if they want to talk about it. A lot of things, I think, are people feeling alone and thinking they're the only one that's feeling this way. So reading stories or books about a character that's experiencing anxiety and then talking about it. But it really is this culture that takes time to develop, and that includes giving teachers a moment to breathe and to come back, and maybe starting staff meetings with you know, a 5-minute mindfulness practice. But the more that we can train teachers and learn ourselves as adults what works for us, the more tools we then have to share with the children. There's hundreds and hundreds of tools out there. So I think it's not really about, you know, the exact tool, but about having this culture where we're talking about those emotions. We're talking about things that maybe feel uncomfortable, but can be really helpful when we get them out, and we're not just in our mind all the time thinking about how to deal with things and feeling alone.
It sounds also, Helen, that we just need to build in space for this, don't we? Time. And I think, you know, Samreen and myself from teaching experience, it feels relentless, the curriculum. Just, you know, you're on this, and I'm sure in your travels around the world, when you've looked at different education systems and the way initial teacher training is approached in different countries as well, it's very much around the end product still, isn't it? You know, grades, progression, rather than giving space about the process, the journey, the emotional aspect of learning. I'm just intrigued to think, I mean, I feel very passionate about initial teacher training. I think there's a lot more that could be done at that stage for teachers around, as you say, space for them to feel their well-being is valued, and also then to translate those strategies and tools into their teaching practice. Any thoughts on that, Helen, from your experience?
Yeah, definitely. It's pretty shocking, right, that we don't really learn about our brains, and we don't learn these things in teacher training school. It's all about kind of the subjects and assessment and all that kind of stuff. But and if there are options, they're usually optional. It's not part of the core curriculum. So I know in Vietnam, they've now made, it's called an emotional intelligence course, part of the core curriculum for teacher training, and that includes a lot of mindfulness and other tools, which is great to see. And I just think there's so many teachers who are amazing, who are wonderful, and they just leave, right, because it's so difficult and it's so stressful. And we know, you know, from research, when teachers are stressed, whether they want to show that or not, the children can feel that, right? Yeah. And their cortisol goes up. And so, yeah, I think, you know, that was really, you know, the message that I would have is, if we can get this into teacher training colleges as some part of the core curriculum, maybe, you know, we won't have as many teachers leaving. We'll have teachers with better well-being who are then able to share that feeling and that outlook with their students, and we'll also develop tools and skills to help students in different ways as they go through their educational journey. But I think, you know, a lot of us in education feel there really needs to be a big change in what we're doing in schools and how we're working with students and what are the priorities. You know, there's a lot of pressure on students with all the exams and tests, and sometimes I think we lose sight of the person in that, and you know, that they're still a worthy person no matter what happens to them in a test or in an exam, or and we miss just so many children's passions and, you know, the amazing things they can do because they're maybe being pushed in a direction that's not right for them or that they feel that they have to go into. So I could rant about this for a little bit.
Well, I was just thinking as you were talking, Helen, you've touched on so many topics. I mean, we can pick up on in our next in our next podcasts. Thank you, and a really lovely summary of, and your passion really comes through, Helen. So I think it will spark some thoughts with people, particularly those who perhaps are teachers. It would be interesting to hear experience teachers from around the world, whether there are any really good initial teacher training practices happening where this approach is being embedded and given value, I suppose, Helen, isn't it? Given the same time as your subject knowledge. Great, thank you. Sammy, shall we pause there for today? I think we could probably talk on for a long time, pause there? I think we've had a good introduction from you, Helen, into this topic, and I'm sure it will provoke some further thinking. So please, everyone, do get in touch with your thoughts. And I'd like to thank Helen for joining us and just really giving us an insight into your work. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Perfect.